Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Tim Wilson with the Wilson Firm for Appellant Denver Garrison. We're here for the second time today, at least most of us are here for the second time, to discuss Mr. Garrison's termination and specifically if the lower court improperly relied upon a clearly erroneous interpretation of the Delaware Administrative Code that was rendered by Dr. Mary Ellen Kotz, who works for the Delaware Department of Education.
I'd like to start with the supplemental briefing because I think that at least what I was looking for may not have been addressed. And that is when a teacher who has an initial license, when the initial license is about to expire, months before that, does that teacher have to apply to DOE to get a license so that he or she can continue to teach the following year?
They have to get approval from the district that they have completed all the requirements of the initial license before they apply for the continuing license.
Okay, and if they disagree with the district, do they then apply anyway to DOE?
They can't apply without the approval of the district.
Okay, so if somebody doesn't, then, and they are unlicensed, can the district renew their contract?
If they're unlicensed, they cannot renew the contract unless they are issued another license.
Okay, and is it then?
I apologize for interrupting. Or if the district requests another year for the teacher to complete the mentoring requirements, then they have an additional year to do that, to complete those requirements in order to get the continuing license.
But if the district is completely uncooperative for whatever reason, it is then the educator's or the teacher's responsibility to be licensed or get the license and apply for that. And if it's denied, then there's a process for review beyond that denial?
No, they can't apply for it unless they have the district's statement or approval that they have completed all the requirements under the initial license, all the mentoring requirements.
Even though the statute talks about an applicant, that's not the teacher, that's the district?
Yes, there was some confusion about that at the last oral argument. And in the interim, I've talked to Dr. Barton at the Department of Education, and I've talked to Jeff Tashner, for the attorney for the Delaware State Educators Association. And the district is the one that has to request the extension. The teacher cannot do that.
And what legal authority is there something in the statute or regulations that says?
Well,
that?
There's a split of authority. The statute states that the educator does it, and the regulation and Ms. Kotz state that the district has to do it. That's why I checked with how it is done in practice here in Delaware, and both the Department of Education and the union have affirmed that it must come from the district.
Even though that's contrary to the statute?
Yes, they follow the regulation.
Well, which should we follow?
Well, it should follow the regulation because the legislature has given the Department of Education the power to enact regulations that they can follow, and that's part of my analysis on a different part of this case. But with that power, as long as there's no preemption by the statute, there's no intent to preempt the regulation, then the regulation can control. May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
Initially, I'd like to address Red Clay's position in its supplemental answering brief. That sets forth hypothetical situations in which a teacher could have three or more years of experience and still not be issued a continuing license. This argument is without merit for several reasons. First, I'd like to address the argument made on page 9 of its supplemental answering brief. I'm taking the arguments out of order a little bit because I want to make sure that I get to this point. On page 9 of the supplemental answering brief, Red Clay's analysis of the inconsistencies of the statute versus the regulation in terms of the language shall versus as it pertains to the continuing license, there's a major flaw in their argument because Red Clay cites to the most recent version of the Delaware Administrative Code, Section 1511, that was revised in February 2010. In particular, it quotes from subsection 3.5.1. That subsection was not in Section 511 during the relevant time period, and the old version did not mention the two successive summative evaluations. The old version, the version that controls in this case, simply states that a continuing license shall be issued to a teacher with 3 or more years teaching experience. Once again, there is no language in that regulation that demands that a teacher have at least two successful summative evaluations. Under the old version, what it states is that if the teacher has 3 years teaching experience, the teacher must get the continuing license. The argument on page 9 is further flawed because according to the terms of section 1510-3.0, that's the provision that pertains to the issuance of an initial license, their hypothetical teacher on page 9 could not receive an initial license from the Department of Education if they were coming in from another jurisdiction. That regulation holds an initial license shall be issued to an applicant currently licensed as an educator in another jurisdiction with less than 3 years of experience. Subsection 3.0 does not contemplate ever issuing an initial license to a teacher with 3 or more years of experience. For that teacher, it's either a continuing license or nothing. Therefore, during the time period in which Mr. Garrison worked for Red Clay, every teacher who was issued an initial license was required to complete the full-blown 120-hour mentoring program. This interpretation is what the lower court based its decision upon and what we contend is clearly erroneous. Now, backing up to Red Clay's first argument in its supplemental answering brief, they contend that that there is a conflict between 14 Delaware Code, Section 1211C, and 14 Delaware Administrative Code, Section 1511-3.5.1. They argue that the in a situation of a conflict that the statute always controls. However, what the rule is that a statute only prevails over regulation when there is evidence that the legislature intended to preempt the code provision. According to this court in Cantica versus Fontana, 884A2-468, quote, the predominant test for conflict in a presumption analysis is whether the statute was intended to be exclusive, end quote. Here there is no such preemption. In fact, the Delaware Code specifically gave the Department of Education the power to enact regulations. This is found at 14 Delaware Code Section 122C.
Well, just to help me clarify your position, the trial judge relied on an interpretation of the regulation that we're dealing with here, found the regulation to be ambiguous, and relied on the department's interpretation, which, you know, basically provided that someone in your client's position would have to do the whole 3 years of mentoring, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Your argument is not that that regulation is inconsistent with a supervening statute or, you know, with the statute that takes priority.
No, Your Honor.
Your argument, then, is that the regulation itself is unreasonable as a matter of law?
No, Your Honor. What my argument is there's There's two subsections to the regulation. There's one for the novice teacher who's entirely new to the profession. That teacher has to go through 120 hours of mentoring activities. There's a separate provision in subsection 4.4 that pertains to experienced teachers. That provision states that the experienced teacher on an initial license shall be subject to no more than 60 hours of mentoring activities.
And the issue is, what is an experienced teacher?
Correct, Your Honor.
And the department said an experienced teacher is one who has 3 years, at least, someone who's been licensed elsewhere and holds less than 3 years is not an experienced teacher. Is that right?
What the department says is there's no such thing as an experienced teacher on an initial license. A teacher that has 3 or more years experience shall be, according to the regulation, shall be issued a continuing license. Therefore, that person can't fall and be considered an experienced teacher on an initial license. Essentially, what Dr. Kott said is that there's only one program. It's the 120-hour program.
Well, let me see if I have that right. Everybody agrees your client had experience. So the only issue was how much experience is required for that in order to become an experienced teacher. Is that right?
That's correct. And according to Dr. Kott, no amount of experience can make you an experienced teacher on an initial license. There's only one she says in her affidavit, there's only one program. It's
in other
the full
words, if you have 3 years of experience, you skip the initial license altogether?
Yes. Under the regulation as it existed then.
And am I correct that under that interpretation, there's a provision that ceases to exist, in essence, because you can't have an experienced teacher new to the state who holds an initial license and therefore is subject to the 60-hour new educator mentoring program, because the way the district defines things, you can't be an experienced teacher if you have less than 3 years of experience. And yet, if you have 3 years of experience, you don't have an initial license. So that category has been eliminated.
Correct, Your Honor. That category, the mentoring provision of subsection 4.4, if you follow the affidavit of Dr. Kott and the lower court's decision, that subsection 4.4 would not apply to anybody.
And that's what makes it unreasonable.
Well, it's
is that what makes it unreasonable?
Yes, it does make it unreasonable because you have to presume that they put that language there for somebody.
What I'm asking is that in essence your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so they created a category that has no members.
Correct.
And that has to be an unreasonable interpretation.
Correct.
When did your argument develop? I get the impression that your client accepted the initial license and agreed to do the 120 hours and didn't really contest that designation at the beginning and went along and got a couple of extensions over time on completing the mentoring, and that all of this came about when he couldn't complete the mentoring and they wouldn't give him an extension. And then, when it resulted in a termination, the argument became, well, I shouldn't have had to do 120 hours anyway, and I shouldn't have been given an initial license anyway. Everything was a mistake. When was this argument made known to the district?
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. He from the outset, he contended that he fit into the category of an experienced teacher and should have only had to do 60 hours.
Where in the record is that?
It would be in Mr. Garrison's deposition testimony. I can't give you a specific site, but I would be willing to do that.
But notwithstanding that position, he did proceed to satisfy the 120-hour requirement, and that's what he was working against when all of a sudden he didn't complete it and he didn't get an extension. Is that correct?
Yes, and it was a condition of his employment that he had to just accept what they gave him. There was no means for appealing the decision to put him in that mentoring cycle.
So at any point in time, did he say to someone, I've done my 60 hours, I should be finished?
I don't know if he said exactly that, but he said numerous times throughout the course of his employment, I shouldn't have to do 120 hours, I should only have to do 60 hours.
To whom did he say that, and when, and how do we find that in the record?
I can find that in the record for Your Honor, and offer a supplemental memoranda of that, but he complained virtually from the outset to the district's mentoring coordinator, Julianne Tankersley, among others, his mentor, Joseph Mazziello, as well as his other mentor, whose name escapes me right now.
Well, as you can see from Justice Ridgely's initial questions, the supplemental memos and other questions, we're trying to ascertain what recourse he had and when he had that recourse. And you seem to be suggesting to us in your arguments and what you've written that even though he opposed what was happening to him all along the way, the first opportunity he had to challenge it was when he was terminated in the process that led to this appeal.
Yes, because there's no provision in place where he could have appealed that decision. It's not part of the collective bargaining agreement. The Department of Education is not a party to the collective bargaining agreement, and they participated in the decision to place him in the mentoring cycle.
Would it be fair to say that your client was proceeding on the track, if you will, of doing the 120 hours under protest or whatever, but that the idea was that if he could comply, he was going to, because he didn't want to have to make a stink about it, but in the end he was unable to complete the number of hours that he was told he had to.
Yeah, I think the way he looked at it is this is the hand I'm dealt. So I'm going to comply with it. And he did comply with it the first 2 years. The third year is when, the district stopped being flexible with him and permitting him to make up these mentoring sessions that they permitted him to do the first 2 years. If they would have permitted him to do that, then he would have fulfilled his mentoring things. And also, my client was really caught in a catch-22 type situation. It was clear with his interactions with the principal that the principal was really going after him. So he was faced with the choice of do I fulfill my teaching responsibilities at the I don't know what the term I'm looking for, at the not ignoring the mentoring activities, but by missing some of them and stay above water on my performance, or do I let my performance drop and fulfill the mentoring activities? He couldn't do both because as a part of his job duties, he was required to put on these performances. And his third year was a performance that usually occurred in the spring. But he had to do it in the fall because they were going to be doing construction on the theater and everything, and it took up a lot of his time. It was something that he absolutely had to do. And that's why he missed the mentoring activities. Furthermore, he was not notified until either December or January of that school year by the district mentoring supervisor, Julianne Tankersley, that because he had missed those mentoring activities, he was not going to be able to make them up, and therefore he was going to lose his teaching license.
All right, so you're saying, number one, from the outset, your client did protest the interpretation of the mentoring requirement that he was being subjected to. And on that, you said that you will provide some record sites. And secondly, that, you know, basically he went along with it to get along. And there was no problem until the district stopped being flexible. That was in the third year.
Correct.
But is it, how does this fit in the role that the standards board has? If someone's denied a license, 14 Delaware Code 1217 says an applicant's entitled to a full and fair hearing before the standards board to challenge a denial pursuant to this section. And then 1206K subjects the standards board to the Administrative Procedures Act, which then provides for an appeal to the Superior Court. How does that process fit within your client's circumstance? If the district is saying you have to do this, how does he get to the Superior Court under that process to challenge what's happening to him?
I'm not sure if I completely understand Your Honor's question, but I'll attempt to address it. As I stated, he was playing the hand he was dealt. He was trying to fulfill the mentoring activities or requirements, and then once he found out that they weren't going to let him, he requested that they give him an additional year for exigent circumstances. That was refused by the district, and therefore his only recourse was to file a claim for wrongful termination under the regulation.
He could not apply for a license and then go through the standards board and ultimately to the Superior Court.
He could not apply for the license without the approval of the district that he completed the mentoring requirements.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Barry Willoughby. I represent the Red Lace School District. I'd like to go to Justice Ridgely's question if I could first, because that was in the supplemental briefing. And as I read the regulations, the term that's used is applicant, and the applicant clearly refers to the teacher. It talks about the teacher not having prior bad evaluations, things like that. So when it comes to this continuing license requirement after the initial license, clearly the applicant is the teacher, not the school district. Now, this has been from the beginning. It was known that Mr. Garrison was going to be on the initial license and have to do the entire program. He took no action, you know, during those 3 years that he was at the district to challenge that. He had, as far as the school district goes, he has a union. He could have possibly tried to use a grievance procedure under that. He could have tried to use the Administrative Procedures Act. Or if all else fails, he could have done.
Excuse me, how would he use the Administrative Procedures
Act? Well, as the court pointed out, there's the section of the standards board code saying that you could appeal the denial of a license to the.
But he hasn't been denied a license point.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry for cutting you off. If he's continuing, he should have been on a continuing license at that point. That would have been his way to proceed. If he agreed he was on the initial license, I don't think he could have gone through that process to raise the issue of whether he was considered an experienced teacher or a teacher new to the profession.
Okay, well, I just want to be clear on this because at least as I read the statutes right. And regulations, anyone with less than 3 years teaching experience starts out with an initial license, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But at least under Section 4.4, there is this category of people who are experienced educators who are also on an initial license, who are new to the district. And for those people, there is a different mentoring requirement in that regulation. So if we assume, based upon what I understand of the record, that at the outset, he was put on an initial license, which was not objectionable because he did not have 3 years of experience. And the only issue was, does he have to do 60 hours or 120 hours of the mentoring program. And are you saying that that's something that he could have grieved about or sought relief from during that three-year period?
Well, we have to remember it's the DOE who issues the license. So
can you speak a little closer to the mic?
I think one thing it might help if you can get raise that podium higher.
Sorry. Does that help, I hope?
A little.
Sorry. I'm not sure if it's on. I'm not really can't tell if it's on or not. But anyway, I'll try to speak up. A couple of responses. The statute talks about a continuing license. An applicant with 3 or more year experience may be awarded a continuing license, not shall be. So there is that difference between the regulations and the statute. Also, when you look at the regulatory guidance, not the regulations themselves, but the language that was written by Marianne Kotz, the guidance, the last paragraph of that says that the district and the applicant have the option to meet and confer and move the applicant further along in the mentoring cycle. In other words, shorten the mentoring program if the district believes that he has the experience to justify that. So that means that there are circumstances in which you could have a teacher on an initial license with 1 or 2 years experience, as stated in that regulation, who could be moved further in the mentoring program to a later cycle and thus complete the 60 hours instead of the 120-hour requirement. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
My question was whether there was a mechanism by which this teacher could object in a formal manner and seek review of the decision to make him subject to the 120-hour program.
I'm not aware of any statutory process or regulatory process that addresses that. I believe the only option would have been either a grievance with his school district to the extent the employer is involved, but to the extent DOE is involved, he could do what he did here, either file an action in the Court of Chancery. His union obviously was aware of this and was behind him. He could have filed some kind of a writ of mandamus, perhaps in the Superior Court, to challenge the DOE's.
Sorry, Mr. Willoughby, your voice is dropping.
I'm sorry.
You talk fast at the same time.
I'm sorry. He could have also filed an action in the Superior Court for a writ of mandamus as well. But I'm not aware of any statutory process, to answer the Court's question, that he could have used to seek review of this decision.
If he had achieved the 120 hours of mentoring, who would have told the DOE or asked the DOE to issue him a continuing license?
The Red Slate School District, in conjunction with him himself, would have made an application to the DOE for the continuing license.
Well, procedurally, is that a document that the district signs and he would sign, or do you know?
Your Honor, I don't know. I believe both signed, but I don't know. I'd have to check that.
Mr. Willoughby, we're told by Mr. Garrison's counsel that from the outset, Mr. Garrison protested, presumably to various people in the district, the fact that he was being subjected to a 120-hour regimen of mentoring when all that was required was 60 hours. Is that, to your knowledge, reflected anywhere in the record?
I believe there's evidence in the record that he disagreed with the fact that he should be put through the full program, but it was not something that he did continuously or in any formal way. He just made it basically a verbal complaint to his site coordinator, Julie Tankersley. The record does show
there was nothing in writing.
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. And the record does show at B7 in our appendix that he signed a form showing he agreed to the mentoring program that the district had put forth. So this is, I understand there's a little bit of a catch-22 for Mr. Garrison, but it really is kind of a Johnny-come-lately situation with his raising this issue now, because all along he indicated he would comply, and now we have some arguments being made. The district was, quote, not being flexible, unquote. The record really shows that the district did not have flexibility under regulations to excuse him from the meetings, and that's reflected in the record. They suggested, for example, that other teachers cover his preparation for plays, that sort of thing, and there's no dispute about that, and he chose not to. He ultimately sent an email that's in the record where he said, basically, you're not going to have to you know, bail me out. I've made a decision as to whether or not I'm going to comply, and if DOE gives me some options, I'll take them.
Well,
but
whether whether or not his argument is late blooming, Mr. Garrison does advance the argument that under the COTS interpretation of the regulation, no one could qualify
right.
under Section 1503.4.4, because anyone with more than 3 years of experience wouldn't have an initial license, and anyone with less than 3 years would not be an experienced teacher. What's your response to that
I
argument?
I disagree with that directly for a couple of reasons. Under the code, and I recognize, again, there's a conflict between the code and the statute and the administrative regulations. But under the code, it says that a teacher who has 3 or more years' experience from another jurisdiction may receive a continuing license, not that they shall receive. That certainly contemplates circumstances where DOE may say that teacher does not have the required credentials to be brought in on that level. And there's some other nuances to that. When you look at the regulations at 1511, it does say the teacher with 3 or more years' experience shall receive a continuing license, provided they meet certain requirements, including having 2 evaluations that were equal to our summative evaluations.
So you're telling us that the regulation that your side seeks to uphold is in conflict with the statute?
Your Honor, it's an issue that does not even address Mr. Garrison, because that's the situation where a teacher has 3 years of experience, and there's no question that he only has 2. He's trying to raise that issue to suggest that there's some complete absurdity to the regulations, that they can't even be enforced. Certainly with respect to him, the fact that he's being asked to go through 3 years of mentoring when he only had 2 years of secondary experience 20 years ago, that certainly is not an unreasonable interpretation of the regulations. The second level to that answer is that
but does it answer the question that was posed earlier by Justice Berger, namely that the COTS interpretation creates a category of people that have no members?
Not entirely.
Not have any members.
Not entirely. If one just focuses on the regulations only and puts aside the statute, then when you look at 1511 of the administrative code, it says if you have a teacher who has been out of the profession for more than 3 years, they undergo a reduced mentoring program as well. So that regulation contemplates a situation not unlike this one, where you had except that Mr. Garrison only had 2 years' experience. You have a teacher with 3 years of experience who has not been in the profession for 3 years. In that circumstance, the regulations require a reduced mentoring program for the teacher who is now applying for a continuing license. So that would deal with a person who has 3 or more years of teaching experience.
But what about the regulation that says the department shall issue a continuing license to a teacher with 3 years of experience?
It says that, Your Honor, and I believe it's 5.1,
perhaps?
Yes. It says that in the circumstance when the teacher in that situation has been out of the profession for 3 years, they do get the continuing license, but it's subject to the requirement that they undergo a mentoring program. So I think that, you know, rationalizes the statute, at least to some extent, because it shows there can be people who have 3 or more years of experience who do undergo a mentoring program.
But they have a continuing license.
Yes.
They don't have an initial license.
Yes,
and the problem is that Section 1503.4.4 says that an experienced teacher new to the state who holds an initial license must complete only 60 hours of mentoring. And I want to know how anybody can fit within that category, since you've told us that an experienced teacher has to have 3 years of experience.
Your Honor, as I said in the beginning, if we're following the regulations and not the Delaware Code, then I would agree that that is a conflict in the regulations, because the administrative regulations say a teacher with 3 or more years experience shall be issued a continuing license, whereas the code says maybe. So under that circumstance, if the regulations control, I think there is a conflict there that would make possibly create a category of teachers who would not get these.
Well, wouldn't it make sense as a matter of how you apply the law that if you've got an administrative regulation that says experienced teachers new to the state who hold initial licenses must complete only 60 hours of the new educator mentoring program, that until you eliminate that regulation, a teacher is entitled to rely on it?
Your Honor, Mr. Garrison was told at the beginning what his requirements would be.
Right, if you but he objected to that.
He made some objections to it. The regulation that Ms. Kotz wrote also says, in the very last paragraph, that a teacher on initial license may request, in consultation with a site coordinator, to be advanced in the cycle. So actually, with this mentoring program, it's really one program. You just skip earlier cycles.
Right.
So that would be the only.
But the point is, as I understand it, you're a new teacher, you get an initial license, you got 3 years, you do 120 hours of mentoring. And if you're a new teacher but you've got a PhD or, you know, you've got some other special attributes, you can talk to the administrator and say, you know, I really don't need 120 hours here. Wouldn't you agree and let me do only 60? And your regulation permits that, right?
Correct.
Okay. But let's assume we have somebody who doesn't get a special dispensation like that, but who wants to be subject to Section 4.4, which says experienced teachers new to the state who hold initial licenses must do 60 hours. It doesn't say if somebody agrees to let you lower the amount. It says that's what you must do.
Right.
And in order to get around that, you've said, well, experienced teachers means teachers who have 3 years or more experience, and then you get to the problem of if you're 3 years or more, you don't get an initial license. You get a continuing license. So haven't you kind of caught this teacher in a catch-22?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The regulation, again, that Ms. Kotz wrote defines a new educator as being one who has less than 3 years' experience. So that plainly is Mr. Garrison, not the other circumstance. It also allows him the opportunity, and in fact he did exactly what the court just suggested, spoke with Julie Tankersley about whether he should be put at cycle one
or not. You're not answering my question about Section 4.4, which in your interpretation has a null class to it. There is no one who could satisfy Section 4.4 because experienced teachers means 3 years, and 3 years means you don't have an initial license.
Yeah, again, going back to the, I agree if we're applying the regulations and not the statute that would occur. But again, that's not Mr. Garrison's situation.
Why not?
Because he has less than 3 years of experience. He was not applying for a continuing license.
Right.
At all.
But that's the whole point here is that he's got a regulation that says experienced teachers. Well, okay, that must mean something less than 3 years because if it was 3 years or more, I'd have a continuing license. So I've got an initial license. I've got experience. I'm new to the state. I'm under the 60-hour provision. And what the school district is saying is, no, you're not under it because you don't have 3 years' experience. But that, you know, that's the never-ending cycle. If you don't have, if you have 3 years of experience, you don't have an initial license.
There are other requirements to be issued the continuing license with 3 years' experience. To get a continuing license, it's not only 3 years' experience; it's also meeting the other requirements of having satisfactory evaluations that the department deems from another jurisdiction, that the department deems the equivalent of Delaware's. So you could certainly have a person who has 3 years of experience who the department thinks does not meet the other requirement, so they would give that person an initial license but not a continuing license. So to get the continuing license.
Even though you've got a a regulation says that the department shall issue a continuing license to a teacher with 3 years of experience.
That regulation, it's 3.51, and after that also says it's not just 3 years of experience. It's also having at least two evaluations that the department deems from another jurisdiction to be equal to Delaware's annual summative evaluation. So you certainly could have a person who had 3 years of experience who applied to the department, and they said, well, okay, you've got the 3 years of experience, but these evaluations don't meet our standards. So you'll be not.
Has anybody ever fallen into that category just described?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't. I mean, one of the problems is.
So we have the possibility of.
We do, Your Honor.
Something other than a null set.
We do, Your Honor.
Even though you have to go to some extreme length to get there.
And one of the problems, frankly, I see is that the plaintiff did not join the Department of Education in this. I mean, they're asking for an injunction for the Red Lake District to give, the person, essentially give them a certification. The Red Lake District can't do that. They're not the certifying body.
So you're saying that we're lacking an indispensable party here?
I don't know, Your Honor. I guess the question is, for the plaintiff's standpoint, if they're here saying that the court, Chancery Court in this case initially, should have issued an injunction directing reinstatement, that can't happen without a certification from the Department of Education. And they didn't join the Department of Education to seek that relief. So whether they can seek other relief, perhaps damages, I mean, that's, I guess, something that would have to be sorted out if we, went back below. But that certainly is a problem here, and I'm not in a position to answer whether, in fact, there have been.
Has that ever been raised?
I don't think that's been an issue that was briefed and raised below. But I guess where I was going with that is, Your Honors, I'm not in a position to answer whether, in fact, that's ever happened, because I don't represent DOE, and I don't know of anything in the record that addresses that issue. Is all I'm saying.
Just to make sure I understand, in response to the null set problem, the conundrum that Justice Berger was asking about, I understand your response to be that, you can't take the subject regulation, you can't read it literally because it conflicts with the statute, which uses may rather than shall. Is that fair?
That's my first point, Your Honor.
Okay. I looked through your brief for any reference to that argument, and it doesn't seem to be made in your brief. Have I missed something?
Certain supplemental reply brief raised that issue.
It's in your supplemental brief?
I believe so, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And then the second level is that when you look at those regulations, they do address a situation that's been postulated where you have someone who has 3 years of experience, but it says they also have to have under 3.5.11 these evaluations. So you certainly can have circumstances where a person would have 3 years of experience, but they would not get a continuing license because they haven't satisfied all of these regulations. So they
which is not an issue in this case, correct?
This is not an issue here because Mr. Garrison only has 2 years. I'm just trying to respond to the fact that this is inherently a null set. I don't believe it is. I think there are circumstances where you could have a teacher with 3 or more years experience who gets an initial license for two reasons. One, the statute conflicts with the regulations, and two, the regulations.
So you have a dual response. One is that the critical language that Mr. Garrison relies on should not be taken literally because it conflicts with the statute, and number two, we need to read the whole regulation in any event, not just that part of it that he's relying on.
Yes, and specifically 3.5.11 that adds these additional requirements beyond just the 3 years of experience. I'm not sure if there are other questions. I don't hesitate to go through a prepared argument because we've, aired most of the issues. So unless there's something else that the court would like me to address.
The issue of fact with regard to the timing of Mr. Garrison's objection. His objections were before or after he signed the document agreeing to the 120 hours?
I believe they were before, Your Honor. He signed the document is at B7 in our appendix, and I think he said, you know, that he shouldn't be subject to this requirement for the expanded mentoring, but he signed that document, which is at B7 of our appendix.
Is there any legal significance to that?
I think it's an acknowledgement that he agreed to comply, and that I certainly understand the argument that he's in a catch-22, but he certainly agreed he was going to comply, and he didn't really raise this issue until he got to the point where he did not want to comply at the end of his third year. Thank you.
You'd wait just a minute until Justice Holland returns.
I have a very important point to make. Mr. Willoughby has cited to subsection 3.5.1 over and over again. That subsection is only 5 months old. It was put into effect February 1st, 2010. The prior version of section 1511 under section 3 contains three provisions, 3.0, 3.1, 3.2. The new version contains 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, 3.4, 3.41, 3.42, 3.5, 3.51, and on, all the way up to 3.7.2. The provision, the regulatory provision that controls in this case is the provision that was in effect at the time Mr. Garrison was employed, the old version. The old version simply says...
Excuse me, is that in your appendix, the old version?
I don't know, Your Honor, to be honest with you. But the old version simply says, the department shall issue a continuing license to an applicant licensed as an educator in another jurisdiction who provides evidence of having completed three or more successful teaching experience. It doesn't contain any of the language about the summative performance appraisals and showing that to the board. Therefore, if you have 3 years experience, you get either a continuing license or you don't get anything. As far as Mr. Willoughby's argument that there's a conflict between the statute and the regulation, there's not a conflict. The regulation still falls under the mandate of the statute. The statute says that a continuing license may be issued to the teacher with 3 years of experience. The regulation falls under that and takes it a step further and say, hey, you know what? We are given the power to make regulations. We've decided that 3 years experience, they shall be issued the continuing license. So I don't think there's a conflict. And as I said before, there's no intent either explicitly or implicitly in the statute that that goes to show that the legislature intended to preempt the enactment of this regulation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.